on Daf Chesam at Aleph. And before we start the sugya for tonight of Kiman Azla, which I'll show you in just a minute, and it's really two lines up before the end of Daf Chesam at Aleph, let's just review what we learned last time very quickly, just the highlights. We had a machlokes regarding Hazah. According to the Shita Rabbi Meir, on every day of the 7 days of Prisha, whether it's for the Kohen Gadol preparing for Yom HaKippurim or the Kohen Tzarif for Sapora, for all 7 days there's Hazah. Rabbi Yossi on the other hand says, no, the Hazah is only on the third day of the Prisha and the seventh day of the Prisha. Rabbi Chanina Skan Kohanim has a kind of a compromise shita, according to which the Kohen Asarif Sapora requires Hazah on every single day of the seventh, whereas the Kohen Gadol in his Prisha of 7 days requires Hazah only on the third and the seventh day. And again, as I asked many times, if any of you can open up your cameras, that would be well appreciated. Now, the Gemara suggests that B'maiko Miflugi, what's the subject of the Machlokes? And the Gemara thinks in the Hamavini, the Machlokes is about whether Tuma Hutra B'tzibur or Tuma D'chuya B'tzibur. Rabbi Meir holds that Tuma D'chuya B'tzibur, and therefore, even though the Karbanos Tzibur can be brought B'tuma, but nevertheless, we want to do whatever we can possibly in order to maximize the opportunity of bringing Bitara, and therefore we want to do Azan every single day. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, holds Tumah Hutra B'tzibur, and there's no need to overdo it and work, you know, overtime. Just do the barest minimum of Azan on the seventh day, on the third and the seventh day. The Gemara rejects this, and the Gemara suggests an alternative explanation for the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, and that is Tvila Bizmano Mitzvah. And the Gemara suggests that according to Rabbi Meir, Tvila Bizmano Mitzvah, that means we have to guarantee that the Tvila in the process of Tara is done exactly in its time. And there's no way you can guarantee that, since we don't know exactly when is Shlishi and Shvi, unless we have a daily Hazah. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, says, no, Tevila Bizman is not a mitzvah, and we just have to guarantee that the process of Tara is complete, and therefore it's sufficient to have Hazah and Shlishi and Shvi. The Gemara rejects this as well, because the Gemara proves that Rabbi Yossi himself actually holds that Tefillah Bizmana Mitzvah. How do we prove this? Because we had a case of somebody who had the name of God that was inscribed in ink on his body, and now he needs to be Tovel in a mikvah to be Matir himself. And there are two opportunities. One opportunity is to use a gemi, and that means to cover over that area where the name of God is inscribed, in such a way that the water will not erase the name of God. The other alternative is that Tovil Kedarko, he doesn't need, and he's not required to run around looking for a gemi. And the reason for this is because Rabbi Yossi holds that Tefillah Bizmana Mitzvah, there's an urgency getting him into the mikvah as soon as possible. And if we have to run around and force him to look for a gemi, who knows when he's going to get around to do the mitzvah. So the bottom line is that even Rabbi Yossi holds Tefillah Bizmana Mitzvah. And then, and this is where we finished it up on Wednesday of last week, the Shitas now agree, both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi are in unison agreeing that Tefillah Bizmana Mitzvah. But the machlokas is, do we have a hekesh between Hazah and Tefillah? And according to Rabbi Meir, we have a hekesh, we have an equation between Azah and Tefillah, and just like Tefillah Bizmana Mitzvah, so to Azah Bizmana Mitzvah, and therefore to guarantee that Azah is Bizmana, we're going to require Hazan each day of the 7 days, because that could be the Yom of that could be the Zman of Hazan. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, says that I don't accept this hekesh between Hazan and Tefillah, and even though Tefillah bizmana mitzvah, nevertheless Hazan bizmana is not a mitzvah, and therefore all we have to do is guarantee that the Kohen has the Hazan on the Shlishi on the third day of the week of his Prisha and the seventh day of the week of his Prisha. The Gemara then asks the following question: how do we understand Rabbi Chanina Sgan Kohanim? His compromise doesn't seem to make any sense. If he holds that Azah is equated to Tevilah, and just like Tevilah Bizmana Mitzvah, so to Azah Bizmana Mitzvah, then even in the case of Kohen preparing for Yom HaKippurim, Rabbi Chanina Sgan Kohanim should have required a daily Hazah for all 7 days. And if, on the other hand, Rabbi Chanina Sgan Kohanim accepts the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, and he doesn't have a hekesh between Hazan and Tefillah, so then why is it that in the case of the Kohen Asarif HaSapar, Rabbi Chanina Sgan Kohanim requires Hazan every single day? And the Gemara answers, Maila Bialma, that this was a separate chumrah that was imposed upon a Kohen Asarif HaSapara. And the reason why we have this chumrah is because we will deliberately be metame the Kohen Asarif HaSapara, and we will force him to be tame b'tful yom. And the reason for that is because of the tzedokim who were saying that the tful yom could not be Asarif HaSapara, so lafuke, to exclude the view of the tzedokim, Chazal had an enactment that we will deliberately be metame the Kohen Asarif HaSapara with the tumah of tful yom. And in the light of that, there's a fear that people will be mezalzel in the Tara of the Kohen Asarif HaSapara, so therefore they have extra chumers in the Tara process. So now, Rabosa, we're going to start the new Gemara for tonight. And once again, we're on Daf Ches Amud Aleph, 2 lines up from the bottom. And I want to say Shalom Aleichem to Brian. I haven't seen him in a while. Good to see you, Brian. If anyone, as I said before, can turn on their cameras, very well appreciated. Again, if you were on this side of the table, you would probably appreciate why I'm asking you for this. But since you're not on this side of the table, so then I guess you don't really appreciate that. And I'm not talking to you, gentlemen. I'm talking to, you know, all my participants in my various Zoom shiur. So, Kemana Azla Hod Tani Rabbana. Now we all understand a brisa, and see if we can attribute this brisa to one or the other of the Tanoim. We have 3 possibilities. We have Rab Meir, we have Rab Yossi, and we have Rab Chanina Sgan Kohen. The brisa says, Ein Bein Kohen Asarif HaSapara Le Kohen Gadol B'Yom HaKippurim. We're talking about the Hafrasha that's required of the Kohen Asarif HaSapara and the Hafrasha of the Kohen Gadol 7 days before Yom HaKippurim. The only difference between the two, Ella, here we turn to Ches Amid Beis, Shezeh Prishasa L'Kedusha, Ve'echav HaKonim Nogimbo, Ve'zeh Prishasa L'Tara, Ve'ein Echav HaKonim Nogimbo. Here we're going to differentiate between the Prisha of the Kohen Gadol. The Prisha of the Kohen Gadol is for the purpose of Kedusha, and we'll try to explain what that means. It has nothing to do with Tara. It only has to do with Kedusha. In the case of the Kohen Asarif HaSapara, it's all about Tara. And that's going to explain why it is that in the case of the Kohen Gadol, for the 7 days of Prisha, we're going to allow any Kohen to come in contact with him. We're not afraid that, as a result, maybe we'll violate the Prisha and the Kohen Gadol will not be the Tara. We don't have to be afraid of that, because the purpose of the Prisha is not Tara. The purpose of the Prisha, the Kohen Gadol, for 7 days before Yom Kippur is Kedusha. Kedusha means to uplift the Kohen Gadol in a spiritual way, to sanctify him so that he leaves behind him what we call Gavas HaLev. When a person is, you know, he's now this is his glorious day. Once a year, he's the Kohen Gadol. He goes in Lefnayv Lefnim. He might be big on himself. So in order to put him into a state of being, because he's about to enter into the Machnas Shechina, he's about to enter into the Kodesh Kodoshim, we have to guarantee that he is muvdal, he is separated from all those thoughts of secular, mundane ideas. He's not going to be involved in social interaction. He is dedicated for 7 days where he stays privately and he prepares for the great day of Yom HaKippurim. So that in order to separate him from any kind of levity, any kind of kalas rosh, the Prisha is going to guarantee to engender within him a state of Kedusha such that he's ready now to enter into the Kodesh Kadoshim, the Machnas Shechina. Therefore, Echav HaKohanim Nogim Bo. Since the issue and the purpose of Prisha of Kohen Gadol has nothing to do with Tara, we don't have to be worried that he'll contaminate himself. And there are no extra chumras with regard to other Kohanim coming in contact with him. We assume that all the other Kohanim are Tahorim. We don't have to worry about the remote possibility that maybe there's one Kohen who might be Tomei and might convey Tumah to the... Oh, I can't hear, I'm sorry. And might convey Tumah to the Kohen Gadol. In the case of the Kohen Asarif HaSapara, on the other hand, Chazal established Prisha in order to be machmir in Tara, as we said before, dafka because we have to be metami him as a tful yom. We don't want people to be mezalzel in him. We want to guarantee his Tara, and therefore we're going to go one step further, and we're going to prohibit all the Kohanim, any Kohen, from having contact with him. Maybe there'll be some sort of conveying of tum over here. Now, I want to share with you the question here of Tosus. Tosus, Dibra Maskel De'i, is going to raise the following question. Why is it that this Brisa, when it addresses the question, what's the difference between the Kohen Asarif HaSapar and the Kohen Gadol in his Prisha 7 days before Yom HaKippurim, and all the Brisa could come up with is whether the other Kohanim are allowed to have contact with him, says Tosfos, there's another difference, which is already mentioned in our Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Yoma, and that is that the Prisha of the Kohen Gadol is to a Lishka, which is called the Lishkas HaFarhedrin. Whereas the Kohen Asarif HaSapara, he doesn't go to the Lishkas HaFarhedrin, he goes to a place which is called Lishka Sha'al Pnei Abira. Now, the difference between these two Lishkos is very fundamental. The Lishka, which is called the Lishka Safarhedrin, is right near, it's contiguous to the Azara, the holy Azara of the Beis HaMikdash. Whereas the Lishka of Pnei Abira for the Kohen Asarif HaSapara, that's on the Har HaBayis. But it doesn't have the same level of Kedusha as the Azara. And therefore, Tosfos is bothered, why didn't the Braisa mention this as a difference between the Prisha of the Kohen Gadol on the one hand, the Prisha of the Kohen Asarif HaSapara on the other hand? The Prisha of the Kohen Gadol is to a level of Kedusha that he's in the Lishkas Sfarhedrin, which is contiguous to the Azara, whereas the Kohen Asarif HaSapara, he's in the Lishkas Baal Abira, Sha'al Pnei Abira, which is in the Har HaBayis. Now, the Har HaBayis has the same Kedusha as Yerushalayim, but obviously when we go from the Har HaBayis to the Mikdash, and certainly from the Mikdash, we go to the Azara, we're talking about a very high level of Kedusha. In fact, a Tomei would not be allowed into the Lishka Safarhedrin, insofar as it opens up into the Azara. True, I grant you that a Tomei is not allowed in the Har HaBayis as well, but nevertheless, that's a lower kind of Isur. So in order to answer this question, Tosfos asks another question. If the Lishka Safarhedrin has an opening, the entrance to the Lishka Safarhedrin is through the Azara, if it opens up to the Azara, then we have halacha in the Azara that ain't yeshiva b'Azara. You're not allowed to sit in the Azara. You're only allowed to stand in the Azara because the covenant of the great sanctity of the Azara. And how much more so, you're not allowed to sleep in the Azara. If the Lishkas of Sanhedrin has the status of Azara, then that Kedusha would make it impossible for the Kohen Gadol during the 7 days of Prisha to fall asleep. He's not allowed to sleep in the Azara. If he can't stand, if he can't sit in the Azara, certainly he's not allowed to sleep in the Azara. So then Tosus backtracks and he says, well, the Pesach to the Sanhedrin is not exactly from the Azara. It's from an area that is close to the Azara, but not the Azara itself, meaning that the Lishkas of Sanhedrin could not possibly have the status of the Azara, because that would be impossible that the Kohen Gadol would not sleep during 7 days. That's humanly impossible. But it has a Kedusha that Tosfos says is greater than that of the Har HaBayis. However, Tosfos now wants to ask the question, as we said at the outset, why doesn't this Braisa list this as a difference between the Kohen Asarif and the Kohen Gadol during his Prisha, 7 days before Yom HaKippurim? In the case of the Kohen Gadol, he's in Lishkas Sanhedrin, which is engendered with a high level of Kedusha, kim'at, almost that of the Azara, whereas the Lishka for the Kohen Asarif is Hapor is on a much higher, low level. It's a level of Har HaBayis. So Tosfos says, that's what the Gemara means. When the Gemara says, in the name of this Braisa, that a Kohen Gadol zeh prishasa l'kedusha, whereas the Kohen Asarif Hapora is zeh kedushasa l'tara, what the Gemara means to say is that the priest of the Kohen Gadol is into the Lishkas Sanhedrin, which has an endowment of Kedusha that by far surpasses that of the Lishka of the Me'al Abira of the Har HaBayis. On the other hand, the Kohen Asarif Hapora, that's all Tara. And if it's Tara, then we can put him anywhere where there's got to be Tara, including anywhere in the Har HaBayis. In this case, the Lishka that was designated for the Kohen Asarif Hapora, Me'al Pnei Abira, that had the Kedusha of Har HaBayis, and it was a place where you had to maintain levels of Tara. That's what we need for the Kohen Asarif Hapora. The Rishonim want to understand Rashi. Rashi doesn't have any discussion here about Lishka Sanhedrin versus the Lishka Me'al Pnei Abira. And the questioner again arises, Tosfos' objection here, why didn't the Braisa mention that as the difference between the Kohen Asarif and the Kohen Gadol? And the answer that's offered in order to explain Rashi is that this Braisa is only looking for fundamental differences. Differences that are very chashuv, not for differences that are secondary. The question as to which lishka the prisha is going to take place in, that's already a secondary issue. That's not me'ikar chashivus. The chashivus, when we compare the Kohen Asarif to the Kohen Gadol in the two cases of prisha, reflects itself in the very essence of the purpose for which this prisha is being enacted or implemented. Is it for the state of Kedusha or is it for the state of Tar? Now the Gemara wants to know, why not add another nafkamina? And that would be Hazah. Says the Gemara, Kiman, Ikar Rabbi Meir, Ikar Rabbi Yossi. You have two options in interpreting this braisa. You could either attribute the authorship to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that all you need, I'm sorry, that in both cases, whether it's the Hazah of the Kohen Asarif or it's the Hazah of the Kohen Gadol 7 days before Yom HaKippurim, in all cases we need Hazah on a daily basis. Therefore, there's no difference between these two prishos. According to Rabbi Yossi, in both cases, whether it's the Kohen Gadol or the Kohen Asarev, all you need is Hazah, B'Shlishi, B'Shvi. So once again, there's no difference between the two. But if you're going to go with Rabbi Chanina b'skan kohanim, then you're in trouble because there's another difference between the two prishos. We have the difference in terms of hazah. And whereas the Kohen Asarif requires, according to Rabbi Chanina b'skan kohanim, a daily hazah for all 7 days, the Kohen Gadol requires hazah only on the third and the seventh day. So the Gemara's final conclusion is that we could reconcile this brisa either with Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yossi, but not with Rabbi Chanina Skan Kohen. Now the Gemara is going to go back to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir requires Hazah on the Kohen Gadol, and also on the Kohen Asarev, every single day of 7 days. And that's because in both cases he has to guarantee Tahara. Maskif lo Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Bishlema, I understand why the Prisha and the Hazah during the Prisha applies and requires Rishon, and we're going to go through all 7 days. Let's start with Rishon. Shema, Shlishi. In other words, if the Kohen, and again, we're going quite to Rav Meir, so it makes no difference whether we're talking about the Kohen Gadol or the Kohen Asarev. If the Kohen, before he entered into Prisha, 2 days prior to the Prisha, to the onset of the Prisha, he contaminated, he came in contact with a dead body. So the first day of his Prisha is now the third day of his Tumah. So therefore, he must have Hazah on the first day of his Prisha. Why does he need Hazah on the second day of his Prisha? Shema Shlishi. We have to consider the possibility that he contracted Tumah 1 day before he started the Prisha. So we count 1 day, and then we start counting the first day of Prisha, that's the second day. And when we get to the second day of Prisha, that's the third day since he contracted Tumah. So that's Yom HaShlishi. So either the first day is a perfect candidate for Yom HaShlishi, or the second day would be a candidate for Yom HaShlishi. Why on the third day do we need Hazah? The answer is Yom HaShlishi, Shema Shlishi. Maybe that's the third day of his Tumah, meaning immediately before the Prisha began, he contracted Tumah. Count 3 days, fast forward to the third day of his Prisha, that's his third day of Tumah, and therefore he needs Hazah. Now let's fast forward to Thursday, to Yom Chamishi. We're deliberately skipping Wednesday. Yom Chamishi, the fifth day of his Prisha, requires Hazah, Shema Shvi L'Tumasa. It might be the seventh day of his Tumah. Meaning, if he contracted Tumah 2 days before the Prisha, then day five of his Prisha is day seven of his Tumah, and therefore he requires Hazah. What about the sixth day of his Prisha? Well, that too requires Hazah. Shema, Shvi, it might be the seventh day. Meaning, if he contracted Tumah 1 day before the Prisha, then Friday, so to speak, I don't mean that literally, but Yom Shishi, the sixth day of his Prisha, would now be the seventh day of his Tumah, and therefore requires Hazah. Let's go on. Shvi, the seventh day of his Prisha, that also requires Hazah. Shema, perhaps, immediately prior to his Prisha, he contracted Tumah, and now the seventh day of his Prisha is the seventh day of his Tumah. So now this all leads up to the Gemara's Kasha, Ela Revi, Lama Li Hazah Klal. Why does he need Hazah on the fourth day? Rabbi Meir says you need Hazah on all 7 days. Why? Including the fourth day. Why the fourth day? No matter how you slice the cake, there's no need and no significance to a Hazah on day four of his Prisha. Why? Lo b'shlishi kolasfuke. It cannot be that this fourth day of his Prisha is the third day of his Tumah, because he's already been in Prisha for 4 days, and during that Prisha period, he did not contract Tumah. Well, what about Shvi? Maybe the fourth day is Shvi. No. Lo b'shviyika l'svuke. It can't be that Wednesday, so to speak, the fourth day of his prisha, is the seventh day since he contracted tumah. Again, that's possible. But even if it is possible, then the hazar and yom revi would be totally meaningless. Why? Because what are you going to suggest? You're going to suggest that 7 days prior to Yom Revi of his Prisha, he contracted Tumah. Well, if that be the case, then he contracted Tumah 3 days before the Prisha, which means he never had a Hazan Yom Shlishi. If he didn't have Hazan Yom Shlishi, it's absolutely meaningless to implement Hazan on Yom Shvi. Yom Shvi is the second Hazan, following the Hazan of Yom Shlishi. If you can assume that on the fourth day of his Prisha, it's, if you go backwards, 7 days beyond or past his original Tumah, that would mean that he contracted Tumah 4 days before the Prisha. Well, if that be the case, he never had a Hazah on the third day of his Tumah. So the Gemara now comes to the conclusion that it makes no sense to require Hazah on the fourth day of his Prisha. Again, just to summarize, the first 3 days of his Prisha are each candidates to be Yom Shlishi Shel Tumah. The last 3 days of his Prisha, from day 5 to day 7, are candidates for being Yom HaShvi of his Tumah. But Yom Revi, the fourth day, right there in the middle of the week, could not be a day that's subject to a meaningful Hazah. Ulitaymech. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Are you assuming that when Rabbi Meir says Mazen Olav Kol Shiva, it means literally all 7 days? There's no way that you could defend that position. I'll prove it to you, says the Gemara. Hazah Kol Shiva Mi'ika? Is it possible to have Hazah for 7 days? Ha'kaimalon? We have a Sugyim Psochim on Daf Samachay. Da'azah Shvus. V'yeno Doches HaShabbos. Hazah, which is meant to change the status of a person, is prohibited on Shabbos, midin shvus. And Chachamim instituted and activated the shvus even in a case of a Dvar Mitzvah, so forth and so on, but it's a shvus on Shabbos, and you cannot override the Shabbos with Hazah. So by definition, it's impossible to have 7 full days of Hazah, because every 7 days of Prisha includes within it 1 day of Shabbos, and on Shabbos there cannot be Hazah. By definition, you have no recourse other than to say that Shiva means Labar Mishabbos. That when Rabbi Meir says Mazen Olav Kol Shiva, he meant with the exception of Shabbos. Is Hachanami here too? I'm going to apply the principle of Shiva Labar Mirevi. That what Rabbi Meir had in mind when he said Kol Shiva, he meant Kol Shiva with the exception of 1 day, and that's the day 4 of his Prisha. Now I want to learn with you Rava. This is brilliant. I got very excited when I learned Rava. Amar Rava, Hilkach, Kohen Gadol B'Yom HaKippurim, meaning for Prisha of Kohen Gadol B'Yom HaKippurim, Delo B'Didan Talya Milsa, El B'Kviya D'Archa Talya Milsa, I'll explain this in just 1 minute, is therefore B'Tlasa B'Tishrei Boy Lefrushe. V'Chol Emes D'Misrami T'Lasa B'Tishrei Mafreshidon Le. I will call it as service apora dibididan talya milsa. Mafreshidin le birvi bishabis. Ki hechid nisrabi revi shalom bishabis. Wow. This is mamish brilliant. This is like me ain olam hab. Says Rava the following. There's a fundamental difference between the first day of Prisha. When we determine what should be the first day of the Prisha, which day of the week is the best candidate for the kickoff of Prisha. Well, in the case of Kohen Gadol, we can't make that decision. It's not in our hands. Why? Because we're going to start with Yom HaKippur, which is the 10th day of the month of Tishrei, and we're going to work backwards 7 days. That's going to be the third day of Tishrei. That's the day of Prisha's Kohen Gadol. What day of the week is it? No way you can predict. It all depends on Kviya D'Archa. It all depends on when Beis Din will determine Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, which means Rosh Hashanah. Whatever day Rosh Hashanah falls on, then 3 days later is going to be the onset of the priest of the 7 days of priest of the Kohen Gadol. What day of the week it will fall on? Your guess is as good as mine. So it's very possible that out of the 7 days of priest, you may have as much as 2 days out of the seven that do not lend itself to Hazah. Why? Because Yom Ravi doesn't require Hazah. Shabbos doesn't get Hazah because Shabbos is a Shavuos of Hazah, Zeinu Dochas HaShabbos. So it's quite possible that out of the 7 days, you'll have to reduce it to 5 days of Hazah. However, with regard to the Kohen Aseres HaPara, this doesn't depend upon Kviya D'Yarche. The 7 day period for Sreifas HaPara, for Prisha, for Sreifas HaPara, is purely in the hands of the Chachamim. They will determine when the Prisha begins. They're not bound by any calendar date. It all depends upon when they want to finish the process of Sreifas HaPara. And they can decide, let's look at a calendar, and decide which day we should do the Sreifa, and then count 7 days backwards, and that's when the pre-show of the Kohen HaSreifas HaPara should begin. And you know what we're going to do, says Rava? We're going to start his pre-show on day four, meaning on a Wednesday. And what is that going to do for us? Mafreshin le'beravi b'Shabbos, ki hechi dinisrami revi shalo b'Shabbos. Right? From Wednesday to Shabbos is 4 days. So that means that we're going to be mafreshim on Yom Revi, meaning on a Wednesday. And now let's count. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Shabbos is the fourth day of his Prisha. There's no Hazah on the fourth day of his Prisha. There's no Hazah on Shabbos. In this case, the Kohen Asara is going to have Hazah on 6 out of 7 days of his Prisha. So again, let's just review Rava's mathematics. In the case of a Kohen Gadol and his Prisha 7 days from the third day of Tishrei until the 10th day of Tishrei Yom Kippur, it's quite possible that we'll have to X out, what do they call it in flying? I don't know, nobody flies anymore, but there used to be something called blockout dates. You remember if you have points. So there are two blockout dates for a Kohen Gadol during the 7 days of his Prisha before Yom Kippur. One blockout date is going to be the fourth day of his Prisha. Another blockout date is going to be Shabbos. And chances are, 6 out of 7, that they'll be on 2 different days. But in the case of a Kohen HaSreifas HaPara, where we're not bound to any calendar date, and the Chachamim will make the decision as to when the days of Prisha begin, they're going to put their finger on a Wednesday. Once they put their finger on a Wednesday, then the fourth day of his Prisha will by definition overlap with Shabbos, and that 24-hour period is excluded from Hazah, but the other 6 days, he'll have Hazah. Brilliant mathematical calculation here of Rav. The Mishnah says that the Kohen Gadol mafrishin oso lishkas farhedrin. And the Gemara now is going to get into a study of the name of this Lishka. Is it really Lishkas Farhedrin, as it says in our Mishnah? Tanya, we learned it a Braisa. Om Rav Yehuda, v'chi Lishkas Farhedrin, hoisa, we'll add a word nikres, halo Lishkas bilvate hoisa nikres. Rav Yehuda objects to the Mishnah. I'm going to prove to you historically that the name of this Lishka, where the Kohen Gadol was separated and quarantined for 17 days, is not Lishkas Farhedrin, as the Mishnah records, but rather it had a different name. It's called Bilvate. Bilvate and Farhedrin, for that matter, are both Greek words. They have different meanings. Farhedrin means Pkidei HaMelech. These are the Pkidim of the king.
Amen.
Thank you so much. Good to hear a human voice. I think I'll say more brachas. You know, I'll get some other food here and say some more brachas, get some more sounds from human beings. Fine. What is the word balvate? What is the meaning of it? In Hebrew, And I'm basing myself on Rashi, the Meiri, and others. Volvate is a Greek word, the meaning of which is Sarim Nichbadim. These are the higher officers in the king's court. I guess in a modern parlance, maybe you'd call them, you know, senators or the vice president. These are the highest officers in the kingdom. And Rabbi Yehuda says that the original name of this Lishka, reflecting the great status and perhaps the glory of the Kohen Gadol, is Blotve, because Blotve means Sarim Nichbadim. Who could be a greater Sar Nichbad than the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, who goes Lifnai V'Lifnim? Why do you reduce the level of this, the name of the Lishka, from to Farhedrin? Farhedrin are Pekidim. You know, they are appointees. They somehow, you know, they get a salary, the Saramashkim, Sarofim, whatever Pekidim they are. Says Rabbi Yehuda, this is a bit shocking, Ela B'Tchila, in the initial period in Jewish history, and this takes us all the way up to Shimon HaTzadik, who was the great Kohen Gadol in his time, Hayukorin Oso Lishkas Vulvate, because of the Chashivus of the Kohenim Gadol. They were Sarim Nichbadim, and certainly the Kohen Gadol. However, that name changed during the period of Bayis Sheni, because tragically, during the Bayis Sheni, we're not talking about Sarim Nichbadim, we're talking about evil people who took over the position of Kohenim Gadol. Mitok Shenosin Olav Mamon LeKuhuna. How were these Kohenim Gadolim appointed during the period of Bayis Sheni? Through money. They bought the position. They paid off the king. The king, the Melech B'Yisrael, was in charge of appointing the Kohen Gadol, and he sold it to the highest bidder. And what can we say about the Kohenim Gadolim during this period of time that lasted for 420 years? Machlifin Osa kol shnei masar chodesh. Every single Kohen Gadol died within 12 months. No Kohen Gadol survived beyond 12 months after the period of Shimon HaTzadik. So the Kohuna Gedola of Shimon HaTzadik, which was a 40-year period, that ended the period of the glory of Kohuna Gedola as an institution. The Meiri claims, by the way, that even after Shimon HaTzadik, there was Rabbi Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who served for a long period of time. He was a great Kohen Gadol. We'll talk about what happened to him at the end of his life a little bit later, but nevertheless, these were the glorious periods of Kohuna Gadola, but that ended. And we could no longer call the Lishka of the Kohen Gadol by the name Vlatve, which means Sarim Nichbadim. Rather, we call it Farhedrin. Farhedrin are Pekidim. Pekidim are hired workers that are paid a salary in the king's court. This one's a scribe, this one's a baker, this one's a cook, and so forth and so on. And that's the word we're going to use to describe the Lishka of the Kohanim Gedolim during almost all of Bayis Sheni. And Rashi refers us to a Gemara later on about a woman by the name of Marta Bas Baitus. She was a very wealthy woman. She was an almana. She was a widow. She inherited massive amount of money. And she came to the king at that time. The Jewish king was Yanei HaMelech. And this was during the second half of Bayis Sheni. And she paid him an enormous amount of sum of money, to get him to agree to appoint somebody by the name of Yeshua ben Gamla as the Kohen Gadol. Now, this is a very difficult piece to understand, because the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra great things about Yeshua ben Gamla. In fact, we owe him to this day a great debt of gratitude. He was the one who instituted the entire school system as we know it today. Originally, a father would teach his son Torah, and if the father did not have the time or did not have the knowledge, then the son just didn't learn any Torah. It was a terrible situation until Yeshua ben Gamla came along, and he established a school system. And every city in Israel, even small towns, were required to have what's called tashbar. They had to have tinoka shabbos rabbim, they had to have schools, and they had to have professional teachers who were hired to teach the children. So how could it be that this woman by the name of Marta Bas Baitus had to pay an enormous sum of money to Yanei HaMelech to hire, so to speak, Yeshua ben Gamla as the Kohen Gadol? Does Yeshua ben Gamla, Chas V'Shalom, fit into the category of these Rishonim who bought the position of Kohen Gadol? So in the Rishonim we find two answers to this question. Some say that there were two individuals that had the same name, Yeshua ben Gamla. And this one that we're talking about that bought the position, or they bought it for him, he was a Rasha. Not to be confused with Yeshua ben Gamla in Masechta Bava Basra. And others say that Yeshua ben Gamla in Bava Basra was a good guy, but he was in no way on the level of the Kohanim Gedolim. I mean, he didn't have that stature, and he never would have been, on his own, been appointed as a Kohen Gadol if not for the bribery and the money that she gave Yanei HaMelech. Be that as it may, the position of Kohen Gadol during Bayis Sheni was a bought position to the highest bidder, Kifar Hedrin Halalu, and it's similar to the Pekidei HaMelech. Shemachlifin Osam Kol Shneimasar Chodesh. The king would hire his Pekidim, each one, for 12 months, and after 12 months he would replace him with someone else. Now, why would the king get rid of his pekidim after 12 months? So I have here a note that, see if I can find it right now. He says, "Hatam shaya melech machlifa midei shana, ki chashash shema imazman yakirum pore hamas." It sounds like the main job of these pekidim was to collect taxes on behalf of the king. And after 12 months, the people got to know these pekidim. They somehow were able to influence them and maybe bribe them and so forth and so on. So before that relationship could get on, you know, get off its feet, the Kohen Gadol would get rid. I'm sorry, the Melech would get rid of the Pekidim, the Pakin, and he would fire him and replace him with a new guy. And they were afraid of the new guy, so they wouldn't cheat on their taxes. Whatever it is, the bottom line is that there's now an equation, an analogy between the Kohanim Gadolim during Bayis Sheni and the Pekidei HaMelech, just like the Pekidei HaMelech would be replaced after a year, so too the Kohanim Gedolim, at the time Bayis Sheni, were replaced, each one of them at the end of the year. They died a year after they assumed the position of Kohen Gadol. And we'll soon see how the Gemara derives this from a pasuk. And now we're going to take the last 15 minutes or so of the Shia to study a Mishnah in Masechta Dmai. This Mishnah in Dmai has only a small overlap with our Sugya Farhedrin, because we'll see at the end of the Mishnah there's mention of Farhedrin. But as Beautiful. But as far as Dmai is concerned, so let's talk about Dmai so that we'll understand this Mishnah. Every 6 years of the Shemitah cycle is divided up in the following way. What I'm about to give you is a synopsis of what's called the Seder Trumos Umasros. Every year of the 6 years of the cycle requires Hafroshes Truma. That Truma is called Truma Gedola. It's given to the Kohen. A Zar, a non-Kohen, is not allowed to eat it at the pain of Misa B'dei Shamayim, a very harsh punishment. But the minimum amount for Truma is Chita Achas. 1 grain is enough. Then there's something called Maser, which is a full 10% of his produce of grains. And that has to be given to the Levi. That doesn't have sanctity like Truma, but it requires a full 10%. Now, the 10% of Maser Rishon, it's called, is given to the Levi. The Levi now has to give 10% of that, which would be 1% of the original, 10% of 10%, to the Kohen, and that's called Trumas Maser. Now, all this took place on the first day of the Shemitah cycle, first year of the Shemitah cycle, the second year of the Shemitah cycle. When we get to the third year of the Shemitah cycle, in addition to Truma, we need what's called Maser Ani, which is again 10% of his produce, but instead of being given to the Levi, it's given to the poor people. And that's going to happen on years 3 and 6 of the Shemitah cycle. So that Maser Sheni, which is the second 10%, is separated on the first, second, fourth, and fifth year. On the third and sixth year, instead of Maser Sheni, it's Maser Oni. Now, let's talk about something called an Ama Oretz. You go into a store and you buy your grains, you buy your fruits. And the store owner is not what we call a chaver. He's not known to be very, very careful about the laws of Trumas and Maisers. The Gemara says we can assume that the seller, the store owner, the Ama Oretz, certainly took off Truma because Truma is a very serious Isur, and it only requires Chita Achas Poter Sakri. So the Amoritz is not going to be inhibited about separating Truma Gedol. What about Maser? Maser is a full 10% of the produce. The seller is not excited about taking off 10% of what he owns and giving it to the Levi. So instead, we have something called Dmai. What is Dmai? Dmai means that although most people, even in Amoritz, will generally be Mafish Maser, but there's a very sizable and serious statistical probability, a percentage of the population, that are not careful about Maser Rishon, meaning Maser to the Levi. And therefore, when you buy grains from an Ama Oretz, your chayv to be mafresh maser. And that's called Dmai. Now again, the institution of Dmai is based on Suffolk. We really don't know whether you have to be mafresh maser. Of course, it might very well possibly be that the seller, the Ama Oretz, was mafresh maser. So in this case, what we're going to require is that you are mafresh maser, but you don't have to give it to the Levi. Why? Because when the Levi comes and says, hey, give me my maser, we apply a principle which is so fundamental in Dini Mominus, Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. You have the burden of proof to establish that the Ama Oretz, who sold me these grains, was not mafresh maser. We don't know. Most Ama Oretz will be mafresh maser. And therefore, the Balabais who purchased the Dmai, he doesn't have to give Maser to the Levi. He just has to be Mafresh. But now, we get to Trumas Maser. if the purchaser is holding on to the maaser rishon, is he allowed to eat the maaser rishon? Well, it doesn't have kedusha, it's chulin. The levi has no rights to collect it because hamotzi mechaver in a suffix situation. But on the other hand, this maaser is tevel for trumas maaser. So the buyer will have to be mafrish trumas maaser, and this he will deliver to the kohen. Again, it's only 1%, but we don't want to take any chances. It's got a very severe isur. We don't want to have it laying around in the house. Somebody may eat it. Somebody's a czar. Give the trumas maaser over to the kohen. Now let's learn the Mishnah in Peah. The Mishnah in Peah says that even though a person who buys peros that it's mai from an amaretz, who might not necessarily be careful about masros, he has to be mafrish maser, but as we said before, he doesn't have to deliver the maser to the levi. He has to be mafrish trumas maser, and that'll deliver to the kohen. And what about maser sheni? Maser sheni, he's going to have to be mafrish and bring to Yerushalayim, because maser sheni has nothing to do with a monetary ownership. It just means that the grains of maaser sheni are sanctified with maaser sheni, requiring that you take it to Yerushalayim and eat it there in Yerushalayim. So in the case of Tmai, although the maaser rishon does not have to be delivered to the levi, and the trumas maaser has to be delivered to the kohen, but the maaser sheni has to be brought up to Yerushalayim. However, there's one exception, and that's nachtomim. Nachtomim are professional bakers. They buy massive amount of tefuah for their baking, and they bought that tefuah from an amaretz, and they want to use that tefuah now to bake bread for sale on the open market. Lo chivu osam chachamim lahafrish. The chachamim exempted the nachtomim from maaser sheni. Ela, all they have to be mafrish is trumas maaser v'chal. Now, you may ask the question, well, how are we able to be mekil on behalf of the nachtomim with regard to maaser sheni? First, we'll ask the question, why the chachamim were mekil? What motivated them? The answer is nachtomim, who are the suppliers of bread in massive amounts, volumes for the people, if they have to go up to Yerushalayim with 10% of what they buy, that's asking a lot. So here the Rabbanan said, we'll rely on Rov. We're going to assume that the Amoritz who sold this grain, he belongs to the silent majority, the people who are Amoratzim, but they are Mafrish. So the Gemara says, Bishleim, I understand Truma Gedola Lo. There's no reason why the Nachtomim should have to be Mafrish Truma Gedola from the Tmai Desanya, because we learned in a Braisa, here we turn to Daf Tesam and Al. Lefi Sheshalach, there was a Kohen Gadol, a great Kohen Gadol by the name of Yochanan, and he sent an investigating committee, Bechol Gvul Yisrael, for Russia, Ein Mafrishin Ela Truma Gedola Bilvad. That the Amoritz would be mafrish truma gedola. Again, as we said before, it's only chita achas. Maaser rishon, maaser sheni, maaser oni, these were major, significant amounts of grains. And some of the Amoritz, most of them were mafrish, but many of them were not. So he made a takana that when a person buys peros from an Amoritz, he has to be mafrish, and so forth and so on, as we discussed. Maser rishon or maser oni nami lo. I understand why the nachtomim do not have to deliver the maser rishon to the levi, because hamotzi mechavel varaya. Maser oni on the third and the sixth year, they don't have to deliver to the aniyim, because again, the burden of proof is on the oni to prove that the amoretz who sold these fruits was not mafrish maser. Hamotzi mechavel varaya ella maser sheni. Nafreshu v'nisku v'nelchu. When it comes to maaser sheni, why did they patter up the nachtomim from that chiyuv? After all, Maser Sheni is eaten by the Bailim themselves. Let them be Mafresh Maser Sheni, take it up to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim. And by doing so, they will avoid violating the Isur of eating Maser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. So, you know, the Motzei Mechavel Haraya element here doesn't play a role. Amar Ula, so the Gemara answers, Mitoch Shefar Hedrin Halalu Chovtino So Kol Shneimasar Chodesh Vi Omrim Lehem Michru Bezol Michru Bezol Lo Atrechiu Rabbanon. Ula says that the Pekidei HaMelech who are hired by the king and are called by the name Far Hedrin, they started with Gzeros, and Kol Shneimasar Chodesh, when they were replaced, then the new Pekidim that took over would try to get as much money as they could for the kingship. So they would impose all sorts of decrees, new decrees. It wasn't bad enough with the old decrees, new decrees, every 12 months. And they would be Mechayev the Nachtomim to sell their bread at a cheap price. And that would mean that the Nachtomim, the bakers, would get a very small margin of profit. Therefore, Lo Atrechu Rabbanon. The Rabbanon relieved the Nachtomim of the obligation to take Maser Sheni and to bring it up to Yerushalayim and eat it there. They allow them to rely on Rov. So this was a special takana in Dmai on behalf of the Nachtomim. My Farhedrin, and here's where we're going to end for tonight, Pursei. What is Pursei? Pursei means Pekidei HaMelech. You see clearly from this Mishnah in Dmai that the use of the word Farhedrin, as we saw earlier in Ula, is appropriate for the Pekidei HaMelech that were replaced every 12 months. And since during Bayis Sheni, the Kohen Gadol was a position, the Kohen Gadol that was purchased, and the Kohen Gadol did not live more than 12 months, they were absolute Rishayim. Therefore, the name Farhedrin is very appropriate. The original name, as we said before, which dates back to the time of Bayis Rishon and Shimon HaTzadik, that was Blatviti, because Blatviti means the Sarim HaMechubadim, the highest officers in the land. And these were the Kohanim Gedolim. They were the highest officers in the divine kingship. They were sent on Yom HaKippurim into the Machne Shechina, into the Kodesh Kodashim. And as we said, they separated for a week beforehand for Prisha. And the Prisha was a Prisha L'Kedusha. And therefore, the name that's appropriate for them is Sarim Nichbadim. But unfortunately, the institution of Kuna Gedola sank to its lowest depths during Bayis Sheni. And during that period of time, these were like Pekidei HaMelech. They only lasted, each Kohen Gadol lasted up to, but not beyond, 12 months. Very often they would die in the Kodesh Kodashim on Yom HaKippurim, as we're going to learn later on. Before we end the shiur, I just want to mention Tosfos' kasha back on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph Divrei Maskil Hazor. The Gemara assumes as a premise that Rabbi Meir holds that the Hazor and the Kohen is because of a chashash of Tumas Mes. And how does the Gemara know that? We could have suggested that the reasoning of Rabbi Meir is because he holds that we're mafresh the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Asarif as a derivative from Yimei HaMeluin. And the Kohanim required Prisha. And that's what we're going to derive from the Yimei HaMeluin. You need Hazor on a daily basis. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan said earlier in the parak. Tosfos says, apparently, this sugya reflects the shita of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, who holds that Hafreshes Kohanim is not derived from Meluim. And this was also the opinion of Reish Lakish, if you recall. And ein lo nalat bilon el mishum chashash tumas mes. It's only because of tumas mes. So let's just make a note of where we got up to. We're here on Daf Tes Amud Aleph. We're approximately 10 lines down from the top of the Ovid, a little bit less. Omar Rabba Bar Chana, and that's where we'll start in Mirz Hashem on Yom Revi in another week.